The opinions expressed on this show do not represent those of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine. Hi, I'm Tina Spindler, and I'm the host of today's In the Garden with UC Master Gardener, and I am very excited to have a special guest on the show today, Ron with Rogers Gardens. Ron Vanderhoff is the general manager and vice president of Rogers Gardens. He's also a professional horticulturalist and a native plant expert. And the reason I'm really excited about our show today is Ron has a concept about gardens and landscaping that I think should be very near and dear to all of us, and that is to try and think more of our landscapes as nature and not as some sort of false environment that we create. So, Ron, welcome to the show. I'm really excited you're here today.
Hi, Tina. Glad to be here. It should be fun.
Yeah. Before we get started on our topic, which I think is going to be so fun because you have such a broad horticultural knowledge and you are so in tune with our native landscapes here in Orange County. But first, I know I'm always curious to hear people's personal stories about how they actually got acquainted with, became attracted to gardening or landscaping. And I understand, like a lot of us, you started as a very young child.
Well, I think a lot of people that are hooked into gardening, maybe at least in my generation, that's when it started. And I think my earliest memories of my garden are probably as a 4 or 5 year old out in my backyard and up in the Los Angeles area with my father. And just, you know, all I remember is strawberries, picking them and eating them right out of the garden. And I remember roses, and I remember a willow tree that was extremely messy that I really hated.
Did you have to rake leaves
yes,
or something?
Yes, especially, you know, as I get a little bit bigger and can handle the rake, that seemed like that's all I did.
Back in the day when we all did chores, right?
Exactly. I'm surprised I still like plants even after that willow tree. It was just really messy all the time. And my job was to rake the leaves up, and it seemed like it was dropping leaves all year long. I'm sure it didn't. But somehow, in spite of that, I fell in love with plants and the outdoors and the gardening, and not just the plants, but the bugs and the butterflies and the rocks and the birds and all the things that were kind of out in the garden.
So what we would all call nature.
Yeah.
So you got introduced to nature in your own backyard, which is awesome.
I think I might have been lucky. I didn't have a cell phone back then, and we didn't have some of the things we have today. So the garden was my entertainment.
Yeah. I think kids, if their parents aren't getting them out in the garden, are kind of missing that part of life. So one of the goals of, you know, having this show and for Master Gardeners in general is to introduce families and kids to the joys of getting outside. So I hope we get to do a lot of that today on the show. Can you tell me, after being a child, obviously you must have made the transition to getting into the field on a professional basis. How did that pathway come about?
Well, you know, like a lot of teenagers, I don't think I knew exactly what I wanted to do. My love of the outdoors just kind of kept growing, and I chased butterflies around Orange County.
Yeah, I know, and a lot of us did that sort of thing.
And followed birds and chased birds around, and, you know, and at some point I tried to figure out what I wanted to do maybe and started taking some classes and in high school and then later on in college. And I decided I wanted to be a landscape architect at a fairly early age.
Uh-huh.
And so I learned my horticulture as it pertained to that and went to work for a landscape architect while I was going to school. But I found that I was too far away from the plants and nature and outdoors and too much in an office. And, of course, doing that, you're basically, back in those days, you're laying out plots and you're doing measurements and you're working in an office an awful lot, and I felt disconnected from my real love. So sort of working at a garden center part-time just to sort of stay connected, and drifted away from landscape architecture, and here I am a whole lot later And I haven't left. I haven't left the nursery industry.
Well, we all love Rogers Gardens, that's for sure. And I know that some of the things that Rogers Gardens in particular has been instrumental in is encouraging, even before we had this terrible drought of the last few years, for many years you guys had even a contest for homeowners, and I think you still have it, right?
We still do. It's our 11th year.
Yeah, yep. And I remember thinking, you know, how kind of avant-garde and maybe a little bit dangerous, mm-hmm. you know, from the nursery person's perspective, the right. retailer's perspective, to encourage people to start using that sort of plant palette. Now, of course, with current conditions, right. we're all looking to hopefully transform our yards, you know, to that sort of plant palette. So can you tell me a little bit, and our listeners, about this concept of landscape as nature as opposed to landscape as just kind of this extension of a false decorating theme that you might have indoors?
Well, you've kind of got it there. I think that we're moving in Southern California into a better understanding of our outdoor spaces, at least our urban outdoor spaces. And, you know, I think maybe historically we wanted to take those outdoor spaces and kind of manipulate them and see them as areas to design or to play and kind of do it in the same way we might do a kitchen or a living room or something inside the house, that it's really different than that. And I think now people are starting to look at those spaces as environments that are living, that are alive, that have nature happening, that are not stagnant or not, they're ever-changing. And so I see a very blurry line, and even more in the future, between a garden and a natural space. And I think some of that perhaps is forced upon us with less resources and taking better care of our space. But I think also it's just sort of a change in our culture, and I think the next generation is growing up with a better understanding of the planet and the resources, and it's not an endless supply of water or energy or whatever the topic is. So anyway, the concept is just sort of blurring what's on your side of the fence versus what's on the other side of the fence, meaning the hillside or the beach or the canyon or the mountain or whatever might be on that other side of that fence. And they're really not two separate spaces. They're spaces that kind of should be working together with each other.
And when you see that executed in a good way, when it mm-hmm. when it starts to really happen, what benefits do you see from that for the homeowner, for the community, just on several different levels? What benefits do you see?
Well, emotionally, I think it connects people. It soothes people. It helps people understand where they are in the world or in the state. When a landscape is a reflection of its place, it tends to have some kind of almost a spiritual quality to it, and it tends to maybe make that those people a little bit more healthy, at least mentally a little bit more healthy. They might feel a little bit better about themselves when there's a connection between where you live, in our case Orange County, and the natural area of Orange County. I just think it makes you feel better about yourself and about what you're doing and about how you're handling that outdoor area. Now, of course, there's other benefits other than just how we feel. There's the real benefits of adding to the environment and not subtracting from it, perhaps, but adding a habitat for birds and animals and wildlife and absorbing pollutants from the environment. And so there's real practical advantages to managing your garden in these ways. But there's also very human advantages than just that it makes you feel good. It makes you understand where you are, and a garden I think should reflect its place. We have one unique quality in Southern California because of our climate. We can grow almost anything. We can have a garden.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, we can have a Cape Cod garden if we want. We can have a tropical
garden. With enough water.
Right. We could have a desert garden or a northwestern garden, and we can do it all. And there are examples, great examples of all of that. But we can also have a California garden or even an Orange County garden. And I think that's pretty exciting. I think celebrating Orange County and Southern California in our gardens is just beginning to happen. People come from the entire world to Southern California to enjoy our climate and our weather and our outdoors. We don't need to display a garden necessarily from somewhere else.
It's funny that you say that because I had the opportunity to go on my bucket list trip, which was to England this last May, went to the Chelsea Flower Show and all of that. But one of the places that we visited was this garden that had biospheres. Mm-hmm. And guess what was in one of the biospheres? California garden, which just, you know, cracked me up. Here we were in England, and I'm all excited about seeing all of the English gardens. And they have created under this artificial biosphere, and they're so excited to have all of these California. I mean, I'm looking at poppies in a biosphere, and I'm just cracking up. Yeah,
there we go. I mean, that's exactly right. We just look out our own window, and we should be celebrating where we are.
Yeah,
it's an amazing, amazing place that we're fortunate enough to live.
Now, what have you seen when you see these landscapes installed that fit into Orange County? Do you get to go back and see them or talk to clients about the benefits that they feel? I mean, are they feeling, in addition to the mental connection and feeling better about themselves, do they see more integration of wildlife or butterflies, birds, that sort of thing? Do they find their garden more alive because of that installation?
Well, one of the advantages of working at a garden center is that we get to talk to customers and gardeners all day long. And so we get lots of feedback on what's going on and what they like and what they don't. We don't see their gardens as much other than mostly through photographs. But we see their gardens through their conversations. And what we find, and especially in this garden contest, we've hooked up with a lot of people. What we find is that people become way more engaged in their gardens. And I mean they're interacting with their gardens far more, where, you know, maybe when the garden was a lawn and some boxwoods and a few trees and flowers along the borders and so on, it was a nice garden to look at and it was pretty, but they didn't really interact with it. They didn't really get involved in the garden very deeply. And what we're finding is that as people move into more habitat gardens, more of these California gardens, is that they start becoming engaged in the garden. They start spending more time in the garden.
Interesting.
Not from a distance, but up close.
Interesting.
They start paying attention to the seasons a little bit more. They start understanding and seeing the insects and the birds and the wildlife and so on that are visiting. And that opens up their whole window to nature. And that's really one of my main goals is to have people understand nature, and often a window to nature is through their garden, especially in these urban environments that we live. We don't have nature necessarily right next to us, but we have nature right outside of our window in our garden. And nature in a sage, you know, that's blooming and things are visiting it, or you're getting the fragrance off of the foliage, and you see the seasonal change in that plant, and it represents summer and spring and fall and the different seasons and the animals that are visiting and so on. It just pulls people into their garden, and it really, it opens up that window to nature as a whole. Even though that's in your garden, it helps them understand how nature works.
That's awesome. Is it, in your experience, because typically in Orange County we have relatively small lots, right? Mm-hmm. Is this still feasible for us to do when we have just these very small lots?
Well, great question, Tina. And there's kind of two answers to that, I think. There's certainly what can you do in your own garden? And even in very small gardens, you can have plants that are attracting pollinators or requiring less resources and water and bringing some life to the garden. But the other approach to it is at the community level or the larger level. If we look at these urban environments as a collective environment, not individual environments, that necessarily the garden doesn't stop at your fence line. The garden includes the neighbor and the neighbor's neighbor and so on and so on. And a lot of the research that's going on, in fact, right here at UC Irvine, is to try to understand these as actual ecosystems, that the urban parts of Orange County, if you put all those gardens together, small ones and big ones, and everything in between, you wind up with an environment itself, an ecosystem that connects all of those gardens together. So no matter how small your garden might be, it may just be a little patio or maybe even just container plants, it's part of the garden next to you and behind you, and it's part of an entire urban ecology, outdoor urban ecology. And if you think about Orange County and how much of our landmass is really in urban landscaping, residential and commercial, it's a great deal. It's a large part of our land is in these manipulated environments. But if we can manipulate them or manage them in a little bit more natural way, it creates an enormous impact on Southern California, on
sure.
the ecology, on heat, on carbon, on resources that are either being used or not being used. So don't necessarily think about just your garden. That's your responsibility. But think about how it connects to everything around you. And if, you know, I dream if, you know, if everybody kind of got this a little bit, and, you know, what could happen in Southern California in terms of nature is pretty profound. If we kind of think beyond our own garden and just how it connects to all of these other urban gardens.
That's a great point.
Pretty exciting.
I think especially if you think about, especially, you know, where we particularly are in Orange County, there are a lot of planned, you know, Southern Orange County mm-hmm. is a little bit newer, so a lot of the developments are very planned, and there's green belts and a lot of homeowners associations that have control of a fairly significant amount of space.
Right.
And that is an amazing revolutionary concept, I think.
Right.
If you can, and as a homeowner, if you're involved on one of these homeowners associations, if you can transition the thinking from, you know, these passive trimmed hedges and thirsty lawn areas that are your common area to something that is much more nature oriented.
Right.
I mean, what a transition that
right.
would be.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's my point, is if we can move gardens just a little bit in a large scale, in a large amount of space, we can really make a big difference in the ecology that's going on here in Orange County, especially with things like birds and pollinators and insects and butterflies and things like that, which are pretty obvious and easy to see. But it's about thinking kind of past and beyond your own garden and understanding how it interconnects with that homeowners association, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or the neighbors down the street.
So we always like to leave our listeners give our listeners a little bit of practical, you know, steps that, mm-hmm. that they can take. And I think a lot of people would be really excited about this idea to mm-hmm. convert, since they already know that they should be converting their landscape just from a straight resource use of water and an expense to them because our water rates have all gone up and we all have allocations. So I think a lot of people are already thinking, if they haven't already, I want to transition my landscape from thirsty to something that's more natural.
Mm-hmm.
What advice can you give them to lead them through that process of getting to a landscape that's more natural?
Well, perfect. Well, I think most importantly is take small steps. Most people are not garden experts. maybe some listening to this show are a little bit further along, but most of the people who own homes and landscapes are intimidated by those outdoor spaces. They don't understand all of the plants and all of the, they don't know what's native and what's not native and what's a good plant or a bad plant, or, you know, and so they're intimidated and they're afraid, and they want, I think for those people, you want to give them small successes that you can build upon. And, you know, I'm very engaged in native plants and so on, but there are some of the native plant community that thinks that we should go completely all native and everything that's not native should go away. And we're going to lose people. They're not going to make that big of a transition all at once.
Mm-hmm.
A person's not going to take out their lawn and their clipped hedges and their flower beds and go to 100% native. There are very few people that will do that, and there are a few. But they're certainly the exception. So my approach, is just to move people a little bit. Give them some success. Start off easy. Just add a few plants. If you're going to add some plants to your garden anyway, just have that kind of in your shopping list of ideas. Well, I want something that's going to support wildlife. I want something that's going to be adapted to my climate. I want something that isn't going to require a lot of excessive nutrition or fertilizer additions or sprays or something like that. So just move a little bit. We've had, you know, lawns have become kind of a conversation in the last few years because of the water situation. And you know, people have stopped watering their lawns in some cases or decided they want to, you know, maybe take them out. And they're just afraid. They don't know what to do. There's this big space.
Yeah, it's intimidating.
It was easy when it was a lawn.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I had a sprinkler and a guy that mowed it. And I, you know, just kind of repeated that every week. And I didn't have to worry about it. And they're intimidated. Well, maybe just take, you know, some of that lawn out and just, you know, put some, call them California-friendly plants sometimes. You know, just take some plants that you like. Don't worry about going all the way from A to Z in one motion. Just go a little ways down that path, and you'll most people, I think, will find that they'll get really engaged in the process, and then that little bit of success will have a comfort level with that, and then they'll try a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and before you know it, they've made a big change in the amount of nature that's going on in their garden. But it won't come all at once. It'll come a little bit at a time.
That's great advice, because most people don't have or don't want to devote the resources to hiring a landscape architect and ripping everything out, redoing their irrigation, and replanting an entire landscape. That's just too daunting, too expensive, and most of us are not going to go down that path. So I really like the idea of, you know, maybe taking that lawn and, you know, carving out, you know, a bed around it where you can put appropriate, you know, irrigation for those lower water use plants.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think, boy, once you see some of those, you know, beautiful California friendly, as you said.
Right.
Now, can you address for folks too, because I think there's also kind of a misconception that if you transition to a more natural landscape, you know, we know that in Southern California and Orange County, you know, our hills are brown in the summer, you know, and that may not be our favorite look for our own personal landscapes. Do you have any advice for, you know, how you can have a natural, nature-friendly landscape that is still interesting throughout all of the seasons?
Well, yes. One of the fears of a native garden is that, you know, it's going to look it's going to look off color, especially during the summer months, and there is some truth to that. It's going to slow down during the summer, most native gardens, and it's going to wake up again toward the fall and winter and spring. And so there is some truth to that. So, you know, as a gardener, we need to be a little more careful about the plants that we choose, perhaps. And most of us aren't going to want to recreate the hillside. You're going to want to create something that is still a garden, that is still manipulated, but it's manipulated less, and it's using maybe plant material that's more climate adapted. So the first place to start would be mostly with evergreen plants. You know, some of our native plants and other
Mediterranean plants have a discoloration during the summer. And just avoid those plants. And those may be in the hillsides in some cases, but there are many evergreen plants that don't do that. They may not flower as profusely in the summer, but they'll keep their foliage all through the hot summer months. And then there are a suite of native plants that do provide summer color. It's summer right now, and I just was out in the hills this morning, as a matter of fact. And there are still plants, many plants that are blooming right now. I was walking through a patch of a plant called Golden Bush, which is just incredibly colorful right now this time of the year. Now, it won't be colorful in spring when we would think that everything would be in bloom. So part of executing a really good habitat garden and nature garden is to have a succession of flowers, and that is to have some selections that will provide summer flower, maybe even fall flower. Some of our pentstemons can be quite late in blooming. California fuchsia is a very famous native plant that is in full bloom in the summer and fall months. And so still have your spring bloom, because that's a lot of what California gardens are about, but hold back some of those for a summer infusion of flowers as well. And there's plenty of plant lists that can help you with that and resources that can give you examples of Mediterranean and native plants that are summer and fall bloomers as opposed to just spring bloomers. You can also add color through the wildlife that you're attracting. And I think sometimes...
Interesting thought.
Not thought of as much. But,
that's true.
But bluebirds in the garden or orioles during the summer that are bright and showy and flashing through the garden, for me, that's color in a garden.
And or the butterflies.
Or the butterflies. Yeah. Or the hummingbirds and their iridescent bodies and so on. And they're adding color to the garden. And in some ways, it's almost more exciting than the flower color because it's unexpected and it's exciting when you see it. So yeah, the butterflies and the birds and such, and of course berries will add color, and bark will even add color, manzanitas and things like that that have color in their stems and their barks, and then of course you can also just do great design by adding color through your pottery, through your garden art, through your wall treatments.
Oh, that's a great idea. Your garden furniture. Yeah.
Yes. So
that's a fabulous idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So color can not only be from the flowers, but color can be from the animals that you're attracting to your garden, and through just good techniques and garden design.
Yeah, yeah. Well, believe it or not, we are halfway through our show already, so I'm going to just take a quick break and let everyone know that they are listening to 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not represent those of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents, and that for more information, you can go to kuci.org. The other thing that I would like to mention to folks is that the Orange County Master Gardeners of University of California Master Gardeners have a new website, and I want to give you that new web address. It's www.mgorange.ucanr.edu. And I'll repeat that again at the end of the show because that is quite the mouthful. And also, if you have any questions about anything that we talked about today or any other gardening question, you can email us at hotline@mgorange.ucanr.edu. Well, you know, I hadn't even thought about, you know, because that's one of my hesitations. I'm a big flower person, you know, roses, bulbs, all of that kind of stuff. And yet, where I live in Irvine, my side and slope and front yard were mandated by the developer to be planted in California-friendly plant palette.
Right.
And so it's great, but of course me not wanting to let go of my color, still have my flower beds in the back. But you know, at least I'm being a little water thrifty by having most of the yard
California-friendly. Perfectly normal, Tina. And sometimes there's a guilt of, well, everything isn't a California native, and my garden isn't California native. In its entirety, I have Australian plants and plants from South Africa and Mexico and a succulent area that is mostly not native. So, it doesn't have to go, all the way. Just, like I mentioned earlier, just add a little bit more habitat. Just move that way a little bit, and you never won't even notice. Over the course of time, your garden will become more friendly to nature.
Well, and I lived in another part of Irvine for many years and had a very traditional, more English-style garden. And then when we moved to this neighborhood, made the transition to a much more California-friendly garden. And I have to agree with you. I absolutely love that we have all of this nature that has now come to us in the form of, butterflies, in the form of jackrabbits, which I could do without, coyotes, yes. Which, maybe they're not my favorite, but we also get deer coming up, to the edge of the yard, and that's pretty special, too.
Right.
So
right.
It is really fun from a personal standpoint to have made some of this transition, and I hadn't really thought, though, about that adding color to the garden, but you're absolutely right. All of the wildlife that is there in the form of mostly the birds and the butterflies really gives me color year-round in that environment.
Well, and not just for color, but, the other part of these gardens is they're living. All gardens are living in terms of their plants, but when you go into I'll call it a California-friendly garden or a habitat garden, or you have a native garden. When you go into those gardens and you pause for a moment, you really get a sense that the garden is alive, and alive not just in the plants that are growing, but alive in the rest of the community that it's supporting. And I don't want to diss on other landscapes too much, but when you go into an environment that isn't as much of that, it's still very pretty and it's still beautiful, but there's something missing. There's something missing in a garden that doesn't have animals visiting it, and insects buzzing, and a lizard crawling over in the corner maybe. And there's something different about that and that experience. And for me, a garden needs to have a little bit of the former. It needs to have some life in it. It needs to be living. It needs to have not just the plants living, but it needs to support other forms of life as well.
I agree, and I think you and I are of a similar age, so our children are grown. But I think about the garden I have now. Had I had that garden when my children were young, they would have adored this garden because there would have been so much exploring and discovering.
Yeah.
And like you said, capturing of lizards as opposed to, the lawn and the straight flower beds where there wasn't a lot of exploring that could be done.
I think that's a really good point, is that our youth and our children and so on might not get engaged in the garden if it's, if it doesn't have that life happening. If it's very trimmed and beautiful, it doesn't always appeal to young children. You watch children. They want to go out and chase the lizard, and they want to go out and look at the ants that are crawling around.
Yeah.
And ask what that snail thing is and what it does, and listen to the birds and so on. And a garden that doesn't have those things doesn't engage the children. And of course, those children grow up to be you and me at some point. And there's a real benefit to having children engaged in gardens.
Absolutely. And to get away from the electronics, I think most parents are looking for ways to get them away from the electronics, but it has to be something that will engage them in a very, kind of traditional, just a lawn and a clipped hedge kind of garden probably isn't going to be able to engage them unless there's things they can discover out there.
Yep.
So, another great reason to make the switch from a straight landscape to nature. Do you have any, for folks who are now inspired to try and pursue this, mm-hmm. this landscape as nature concept, do you have any, I mean, first of all, they can come to Rogers Gardens. You guys always have great displays and usage of California-friendly plants that are just gorgeous, you know, completely, you know, switch from the high water usage, but every bit as beautiful as the, you know, gardens 15 years ago
sure.
that were done here. So I know that this is a great place to come to get some ideas. But do you have any books or other reference materials or websites that you think are of use to people who want to do a little exploring on their own of this topic?
Well, sure. I'm going to answer that first in an odd way. To really understand a garden that I'm talking about here, a nature garden, probably the first place to start is actually outside of your garden and get involved and get engaged and go for a walk and visit some of the natural areas of Orange County.
That was going to be one of my other questions. I asked them backwards. I should have asked you that question first.
Well, I was waiting for this question, so I'm just going to go that direction.
Yeah, let's do.
So to understand a garden that connects with nature, you first have to understand what the model is. And the model is out in the hills or up in the canyons or whatever. And by really engaging in that, by getting involved in nature outside of your garden, it'll give you a perspective and a context to bring things back into your garden. So go for hikes, go for walks, get involved in organizations or groups that conduct these sorts of things. I'm giving myself a little plug here. I'm involved in the California Native Plant Society. And I lead a dozen
organization.
Yeah, I lead a lot of interpretive hikes and
I didn't know that.
Field trips and so on. And the point is to get people to understand how nature happens in Orange County.
And where would folks find out about hikes and that people are leading that they could join in on?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The internet. Because if you didn't, I was going to tell you anyway.
Anyway.
Well, for me and our group, it would be through connecting with the Orange County chapter of the California Native Plant Society. And that can just be found through our website. It's occnps.org. Or just type in California Native Plant Society and you'll get pretty close to it. And from there, there's all sorts of resources, not just on gardening, but on native plants in general. And the field trip program is listed there, and you can pick and choose, and they're all free and open to the public. And we go really slow. No one's going to be intimidated. We take people to very local places, Newport Back Bay or San Joaquin Marsh, or just very simple, easy places. Or we take people out into the hills and up into the higher mountains and talk about the plants there and as well. And there's lots of other great groups. All these open areas and natural spaces have groups that sort of take care of them, and most all of them have interpretive programs and field trips and days for people to come out and learn. I really encourage people when they're trying to understand local nature to go with the group. Go on your own too. Go for walks and explore the hills. But really important is to go with somebody that can really explain it. It'll open up your eyes to what's happening on the hillsides and in the canyons and in the fields in Orange County. It's one thing to walk through those areas and look at the plants, and maybe you know a few of them and maybe you don't. But it's incredibly more powerful when you walk that same path with an expert, with somebody who really understands and can tell the stories of those plants. And why is this plant growing here? And why is it not growing 20 feet over there? And why is it blooming now? And why is it not blooming 6 months from now? And why is that bug on that plant and not on that plant? And all of these little backstories. And when you understand those stories and you understand how things kind of happen in nature, it opens up enormous insights into your own garden. Even if you're not even if you are gardening with hedges and lawns, it still helps you understand how those plants persist and what they need. And, well, when you know where a plant came from, and you know what tolerances it has and what its rainfall is in its natural world versus your garden world, it just makes gardening so much less of a struggle and so much more enjoyable. And it's sort of like riding a bicycle downhill versus uphill. It's just so much less effort.
Good when analogy.
There's so much less effort when you understand what that plant wants and what it doesn't want. And you learn that by visiting nature and visiting hillsides and canyons and beaches and wherever plants are growing on their own and not assisted by people. And you really learn it when you have somebody there to explain it. And
absolutely.
Maybe it's a book, but live person is just so much more powerful.
Sure. What are some of your favorite areas to hike in Orange County?
Well, almost anything that's wild I really enjoy. For me and a lot of my nature friends, I think we like places that offer as much variety in their habitats as possible. Canyons are good places for that. Generally, in a canyon, at the very bottom of that canyon, you have a completely different plant community and different plants and a different ecology going on than the hillside that's right next to it. And then understanding that that canyon might be facing east and west and noticing the differences on the east slopes and the west slopes. So for me, canyons are really fun. The more wild the canyon, the more further away from people and
development,
mm-hmm. the more pristine and the more natural and the more exciting it is.
So do you do a lot of hiking east towards our hills
Yes, I spend a lot of time up in the Santa Ana Mountains and the adjoining San Mateo Wilderness, which is sort of in the south part of the county. So, for the local folks here, you know, Upper Tribuco Canyon is just wonderful. The upper reaches of Silverado Canyon are amazing. A little bit further off the track is San Mateo Canyon. It's a national wilderness area, and it's our only wilderness area in our local area. And there's no roads, there's no mountain bikes, there's no vehicular traffic.
No mountain bikes, huh?
No.
Interesting.
You can head off in one of the trails into the San Mateo Canyon Wilderness and not see another person for the entire day.
I'm not familiar with the San Mateo Wilderness. How would I get to it, say, from Rogers Gardens?
Well, there's different access points. It's south of Highway 74. It's sort of on the border between San Diego County and Los Angeles County.
Oh, okay.
And the access points are all trails, so you can't really drive into it and experience it that way. You have to hike into it, and that's meant that way in order to preserve it. So you can access it from parts of Highway 74, which is the Ortega Highway. It's mm-hmm. well known. You can also access it from going up from the backside. Parts of Murrieta and Temecula and kind of coming in that way. So those are the main access points, or are they from the east?
Along
Ortega Highway, uh-huh. From that side. But they're amazing, and our Native Plant Society always leads a trip or two into that area to understand the native plants and the ecology that's going on there. And then one other place, there are lots of places here along the coast, but Aliso Canyon, which is in South Laguna, is an amazing place, and it's surrounded by development, but it's still a very pristine area, and we have very rare plants and very rare plant communities in that area. Right here on the campus at UC Irvine, we have an ecological reserve that most people don't know about, right on the edge of the campus, and it's well protected. And it's a wonderful place, especially in spring, to see wildflowers. And again, there's sometimes groups that will take you through that preserve and explain the plants, identify what you're looking at. And that's just right here in Irvine. So there's nature all around us. Depending on what you like, if you like mountains or oceans or coasts or pine forests, we have it all here in Orange County.
Yeah, that's great. And we just don't spend enough time getting out and exploring it, sadly.
Well, and that's how you learn how a garden grows. Because a garden is nature. It's sometimes manipulated through additions of water and nutrition and things like that. But it is still nature. And so when you understand how real nature works, it's not being assisted, it helps enormously to understand how to manage your own garden. And it helps you understand why things aren't growing well or why things are growing well once you understand how natural areas function.
That's great. Do you have, I know I get questions a lot from folks come the rains and we get a good year of rains and people will ask me.
And it's all forgotten.
It's all forgotten. But then they'll ask me, I'm not sure why they think as a master gardener I know this, but they always ask me, well, where should I go hiking to see wildflowers?
Right.
Do you have any favorite spots to go in the winter, spring to see wildflowers?
Well, I kind of chase the flowers through the county. That part of my responsibilities with the Native Plant Society is with managing and monitoring rare plants and some sort of status and distribution of our native plants and where they are and where they aren't. So I'm moving around the county and I'm kind of following the plants as they go through their cycles. So I'll usually start on the coast at the beginning of the season because the temperatures are milder there and we get our first blooms in the coastal canyons and the coastal grasslands and places like that. And as the season it moves through the months, I'll move further up into the mountains until eventually I'll get up high into the Santa Ana Mountains. And that's kind of how the bloom moves through any kind of an area. It moves from the milder coastal low elevations first. That's where the bloom starts. And then it sort of finishes up in the pine forests, up in our case in Orange County, up above 5,000 feet. And so that's what I would recommend for other people too, if they're trying to, follow flowers through the county. You can do it over months and months and months if you just kind of follow that succession from coast to mountains.
That's a great idea. You know, I do a few hikes here along the coast. You know, when the wildflowers are in bloom and really enjoy it, mm-hmm. But it never occurred to me to go inland and go up the mountain.
Yeah.
And you're right. You probably get wildflower bloom into summer.
Absolutely.
Up there.
And if you go even further, if you go into the San Bernardino Mountains, or only an hour and a half away, I mean, you can see meadows of wildflowers in July, quite commonly, because the bloom is much later. And you go to the Sierras, you can even add another month to that. So that also is how you can manage your garden by understanding these successions of blooms. You can manipulate that a little bit in your own garden, and you can have coastal wildflowers that bloom very early in the year, and then you can get into your mountain wildflowers that may have a much later bloom, and that's how you avoid some of that summer off look.
So what's your experience, speaking of wildflowers, in having wildflowers in home gardens? Is that something that you can successfully try as a home gardener? And what would be the process to make that happen?
Well, certainly. I mean, the easiest, when people think of wildflowers, they're usually probably thinking of annuals. Of course, there are lots of perennials that can add flowers too. But for annuals, we're almost at that planting time now. In another month or so, once the fall rains begin, it's really the time to start planting those annuals, most of them. And a lot of people are going to plant them from either seeds or starts. But seeds are the most economical method. And so you want to time the seed being added to your garden with the onset of our fall and winter rains. And usually that happens in November and December. The last few years...
It's anybody's guess.
It hasn't happened. But assuming that we get at least some modest rains this year, ideally those lupins and poppies and other plants would be distributed just at the onset of a nice 4 or 5 day rainy spell. And the rain will do the germination for you. So applying the wildflowers at the right time of the year is critical. They may not be in bloom until February or March or something like that, but applying seed during that late in the season is pretty futile.
Right.
It won't really work that
right.
way.
Right.
You've got to get the seed down and let the winter rains develop those roots and develop those young plants, and then a little bit of sunshine later in the year begins the bloom process. So getting the wildflower seed added, or if you're going to put starts in, getting the starts put in during the winter, not in the spring, even though they're starting to bloom then, a good gardener will know, always, you know, get them in, get them well-rooted, and then enjoy the show a few months later.
Is there for wildflower, say you're going to do the seeds, is there some soil prep that you would recommend, or are they so hardy that you just take handfuls and throw them out there?
Well, I wish it was as easy as just tossing the seeds around. So soil prep, generally, no. You're dealing with plants that are well adapted, so they really won't need much soil prep. Probably the biggest concern is weed growth. Once you have a bare area of soil, you apply seeds to it, wildflower seeds or annual seeds, and you begin raking that soil or preparing that soil or getting it ready for that seed, and maybe you add a little bit of extra waterings to help germinate the seeds, well, you're also going to germinate whatever other weed seeds are present in that soil. So one technique that helps is to irrigate that soil a little bit first. Put the sprinkler out there, use a little bit of that scarce resource, but germinate those weed seeds. Mm. And then either cultivate them in and just, you know, rake them off and kill them that way, or if you want to use a little mild herbicide, that's your choice. And then maybe irrigate again and get another crop of weed seeds to germinate and do the same thing again. Do a couple of cycles of that, and you can actually do that now in October.
Sure.
And that will exhaust most of the seed bank from those weed seeds. Then, when November comes, or December, and you decide to put the lupins or the poppies or the clarkias or the other wildflowers out, they're not competing with all of those weed seeds. The weed seeds have already germinated, you've already killed them, and now you have a better chance for the wildflowers to really do their business.
Oh, great advice. That's what I've been doing wrong. I haven't been haven't been getting those weeds out, and so then I crawl around on my hands and knees, and I'm trying to pull those weeds out in between the wildflowers. And, of course, if you haven't grown those wildflowers before, you're not sure which is the weed and which is the wildflower necessarily. So
that's true.
That's always a challenge. I assume that also this time of year, if we were going to be doing some transition to a more nature type of landscape, that we would want to do it in this wintry kind of season where we are going to take advantage of the rainfall if we get some?
This is the absolute beginning of the gardening season, really, in Southern California. Is really right now, mid-October, and now really is when we should be spending most of the time building our gardens, planting our gardens, designing and organizing our gardens. Unlike most of the country, gardening isn't about spring here. We have the show, perhaps, then, but really gardens wake up in the fall. And our winters are so mild, our rainfall and moisture pretty much all happens from November to about April. And so we can have the benefit of those mild temperatures, all of that free moisture that we're going to get this winter.
We hope.
And having the plants in the garden and in the ground at the onset of that growth period, it means you're working with nature as opposed to trying to do something out of that cycle. And I think, as most of the master gardeners will know, the other half of the country, or the other 90% of the country actually, doesn't have this cycle. So we need to be careful about what we read in garden books and what we see on HGTV and so on. It's not necessarily wrong. It's just not geared for this narrow little niche of the country that we're fortunate to live in. Our gardening cycle starts in October and November, not in March or April. So now is the time to be out doing your plant purchasing, designing your garden, getting plants into the ground in the next 60 or 90 days, and enjoying those winter rains, those mild temperatures, so that by the time summer does come and the rains stop, the plants are already established, they're already deeply rooted, and they're ready for summer.
Great advice. Yeah. So I hope we've inspired everyone to get out there and fill up their wagons with lots of plants and create not landscapes but some nature
right
in their own yards. Ron, thanks so much for being on our show today. I think this has been one of my favorite and inspiring shows and just tweaks our mindset a little bit about how we think about gardening.
Well, it's a privilege to be here. Thank you very much, Tina, for letting me chat.
Thanks so much.